Hello, everyone. I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, the daily podcast where we make today make sense. We try.
Or die trying. That's right. I'm Kai Rosendahl. Thanks for joining us on this What Do You Want to Know Wednesday? Wait, was that too much? Did we not do that? What Do You Want to Know Wednesday is the title of the podcast. Today, we take a day a week. Answer your questions as best we can from what we know, but also from what Marissa Cabrera, our producer extraordinaire, tells us are the correct answers to your questions.
So just dug up in advance. If you would like to submit your questions for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, makemesmart@marketplace.org is our recently I said that email address to someone who wrote, who then attempted to send me an email at market.org. O-R-D. Oh, I was like, that's not even a TLD. Anyway, on to your questions. We are going to start with a question from Alex in California via email. Stop me if this is a stupid question. We never would, Alex. There's no such thing. But, writes Alex, sensing monumental antitrust legislation is on the horizon for some of the U.S.'s largest companies, could we see major fallout in the stock market if and when it passes? First of all, I'll say it's a little hopeful to assume that monumental legislation is actually on the horizon. It's a twinkle in the eye of Congress at this point and possibly the president. So it seems like the short answer is maybe, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So you do the laws, then I'll do the stock market thing, right? Because we should review what these laws do.
We should. So if any of the, there are like multiple laws in consideration, as many as five, it seems right now, in addition to an executive order from President Biden that would actually just go further than legislation and basically say, dear Justice Department and FTC, you need to figure out this situation with mergers and stop perhaps rubber stamping them, as has been your want. That would also include looking more closely at vertical mergers, like when CVS bought the health insurer Aetna, so that we don't end up in the situation we're all in with eye care, where it's like all one company running every single brand. That was the most interesting podcast. The legislation would, among other things, right, these sort of buckets of legislation, potentially prevent big tech companies and any big company from buying a rising competitor in order to stifle that competition, let regulators sue to break up big tech companies when they say that their role as the operator of a platform, this is that gatekeeper thing we were talking about, presents an irreconcilable conflict of interest. Obviously, that's all about Amazon. And side note, Amazon today sent a letter to the FTC asking that Lina Khan recuse herself, the new chair of the FTC, because in the past, as a legal scholar and lawyer, she has written pieces determining that Amazon presents a very specific kind of antitrust paradox, which is super interesting.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, you file that one under the hubris file. Anyway, so the thing about the stock market is this. Number one, sure, if all of these things passed, there would be some effect, and it would probably not be great. But if, and look, 47,392 things have to happen between here and there, and we're on step four. But if some of these big companies do get broken up, and let's say, I'm just going to pick an example, right? Let's say the Federal Trade Commission and the ensuing court battle decide that Facebook has to spin off Instagram, then that is a value creation for investors, right? Because Instagram will be sold publicly. It will be snapped up. Same thing would happen for WhatsApp or any of the other things that could conceivably be spun off in a breakup. And that would then create other kinds of value, other kinds of conundrum in terms of regulation and what to do about it. But it's not, you're not going to see the stock market crater. Would there be some impact? Sure. But there would be other sort of countervailing things that would happen as well. That's my sense.
I found this really interesting piece from a site I would have to check. However, there's a lot of research cited in this piece on socioeconomics.net, writing about a socioeconomic perspective on the Microsoft case. Because I was duck-ducking around to try to find out what had happened to, you know, since this is the biggest antitrust lawsuit in recent memory was Microsoft in the 90s. It had very little impact on Microsoft stock. Even at the time that it was happening, apparently Microsoft stock tripled after the DOJ filed its lawsuit. It doubled after the 99 finding of fact, in which a judge ruled that Microsoft was, in fact, a monopoly. And then has this kind of long-term historical analysis of aggregate stock prices related to antitrust. And there's a really black and white chart. It's not pretty, but it's all these different cases in the past. RCA, U.S. Steel, IBM. And it finds that in terms of the stock market overall, especially, very little impact. I should have put that in our Slack earlier, but I just put it there now so you can find it on the
good
show
one.
Page.
It's a really good one.
Yeah,
it's a really good
one. It was interesting.
All right, Ellen in Pennsylvania. Here you go.
In less than a year, pharmaceutical companies developed vaccines in response to the coronavirus. But that made me wonder why vaccines haven't been developed yet for other viruses, like HIV and Ebola, diseases that have been around for almost 50 years. Is the lack of vaccines for those diseases a factor of limited scientific knowledge? Is it discrimination? Or is it that the pharmaceutical companies don't see enough potential profit in these vaccines? Thanks for all the smartness.
All right, so I'll take the first whack at this one. And the caveat here is that I am not a scientist. But with HIV specifically, it's a completely different virus. Excuse me. It's a completely different virus than the virus that we're dealing with right now. So that's issue number one. And the way it interacts inside the body and with medicines and all that jazz, it's just not the same thing. But I kind of have the same question about almost every other kind of viral illness that we deal with. Because as we've talked about on this podcast, these mRNA vaccines are damn near miraculous. And so I expect in the years to come, a whole lot of diseases are going to get wiped out. That's just me. But, that's what I think.
Exactly. No, that's totally. I mean, that is what every scientist that we have talked to and that I have talked to has said. That and in fact, if you look, I duck-ducked while our guest was talking there.
Fair enough.
And sure enough, there are articles from like 1 to 3 days ago. They're like, hey, scientists are investigating mRNA vaccine technology for cancer and HIV cures. Scientists hope mRNA vaccine technology can be used to cure cancer and HIV. Like it's a this technology, the simple answer there is one, this technology didn't really exist. It's only been around for about 10 years. The COVID-19 vaccines are the first time it's ever been used in, a commercially available, broadly available vaccine. And I have certainly talked to at least one epidemiologist who's like, hey, man, every virus is now on notice because this technology is indeed remarkable. And then the other thing that does go into this in terms of potential profit is that historically we haven't invested a lot of money in vaccine development because A, we're not good at public health, and B, if you cure a disease, you don't usually make money on it in the long term.
Right.
And so it hasn't been.
Exactly right. It's not a great business proposition unless there's a global pandemic and the government of the United States plows $6 billion into it and the world needs it, right? I mean, it's really tough.
Because it's crushing the economy, right? It's like, HIV, AIDS has killed 30 million people. 30 million people.
Yep.
So there's plenty of incentive. We certainly don't mean to suggest that, but that is why that investment isn't always there. It's just not a...
Yep.
So if it can be, if these can be cheaply and easily made, hopefully there's a lot more hope on the horizon.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we got another one. Ted, Chicago, begin.
Hey, Kai and Molly, this is Ted from Chicago. Recently, my wife and I went into the third restaurant that said that they didn't have chicken wings because of a supply chain shortage. I don't understand why we still have chicken in all the grocery stores, but a shortage of chicken wings. Can you make me smart?
I love this.
This is like a toss to Marissa in the best possible way. Because, of course, you know what she did? Reached out to the National Chicken Council.
Yes, of course. Yes, of course. Totally.
Yep. And apparently a spokesman said generally wings are produced and packaged differently for grocery stores versus restaurants. So it's that sort of classic thing where like there was lots of toilet paper in the world.
It's the toilet
in the
paper
early time.
That's exactly right.
But it was packaged wrong.
Right.
And you can't just like.
Yep. My favorite part of this is that I don't know if everybody has Wingstop near where they live. It's a fast food place based on chicken wings and whatever. They are now launching a new brand because the wing shortage is so bad, called Thigh Stop. That is not a joke. Thigh Stop. Truly.
That's funny.
Yep.
You know, this could be a plus for us, actually, because chicken thighs are delicious and have more meat.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot more, like, bang for your chicken buck there.
I've never understood chicken wings, right? I mean, they're all gristly and they're small and, you know, it's like a vessel to get barbecue sauce and blue cheese into your mouth and, you know, have a beer, which nothing wrong with that, but really? Yeah,
but
one more item here from the... Well, they are overrated, yes. Mm-hmm. National Chicken Council tells Marketplace's Marissa Cabrera, supply is tight, but the sky is not falling. Production's picking back up and is going to ramp up into the summertime. So, you know, hold fast and your wings will come to you.
Your wings will fly your way. I also love the fact that the chicken sandwich war has led to an increase in demand for chicken breast meat, which makes perfect sense. I mean, this show is so great. We cover all the basics, on What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. And we actually have one bonus question before we go that is just
we got it.
Right up my alley. We got an email that says, hey guys, I am watching Clippers versus Suns on Saturday night, and I'm getting frustrated with all these three-point attempts. Try being a Warriors fan, friend. I know that there's been some crazy records set over the past few years for three-point shots, but why do these teams keep taking shots despite failing? Sorry, I'm frustrated. Make me smart.
Wow. Wow.
So just like a fun setup before we get to the data, I will say that way back in 2016 when I was like brand newbie at Marketplace, I think I'd only been here a year or so, I got invited to this weird event with Steph Curry and like Britta Water at an Oakland school.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, all right, I guess I'll go to this.
Sure, I'll go.
What I'm going to ask him about. So then I was like, hey, Steph Curry, I work for an economics program, and I want to ask you about the economics of the three-pointer. Like, do you think that because it's much more efficient as a basketball shot, since everyone you make is 150% of a regular shot, that coaches are going to start recruiting, you know, for more three-point shooters like yourself. So Marissa was kind enough to pull his answer.
Oh, that's great.
Which is right here.
That's great.
Yep.
I've heard that the trend of what, you know, at my percentage of how many makes I make, it's a lot better for me to keep shooting threes and to try to find more, you know, efficient twos and stuff like that. So it's nice that what I do and what how I play the game, and I think is mathematically more successful, and the potential for us to win more games is there. So it's just a nice blend there. So, yeah, I don't really try to think about it too much on the court, just do what I do, but haven't done the advanced analytics on it, it does make sense.
That's great. That is awesome.
He played with
that. That is awesome. That is awesome. He totally rolled over. That was great.
After all these years, there's finally like a reason to use that name. Because that felt like...
Look, always save your notebook, man. Always save your reporter's notebook.
You never know. So this has, in fact, then, of course, obviously become like a huge trend in basketball. Everybody trying to make three-pointers.
Totally.
And we did a story on Marketplace Tech about, you know, exactly this, the kind of question of the, efficiency of the shooting. And I mean, the short answer is, even if they fail more, it's still worth taking the shots because the points are worth it.
Right. The points make it up. Yeah, somebody's done the regression analysis on that one for sure. That's awesome. That is a great use of archival tape right there, ladies and gentlemen.
I know. Yay.
And you
save
know
your notes.
Great?
Exactly.
Marissa That's took it. All those notes and she put like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. She put like 10 bullet points in here.
I know.
Maybe she's
so
a basketball fan. I don't know.
Maybe.
Okay.
No,
maybe.
She's just good.
Seeing as how we've been working with her for a year and we've never met her in person, you know, there's that.
I know,
right.
but
anyway.
I do feel like we'd know. I'm checking the Slack. Is Marissa a huge...
Know.
Oh, and however, she does say the three-point question, because we left his name off, the three-point question was from Mohammed. Thank you.
Oh, that's fair.
For that question.
Gotcha.
And
fair
I agree
enough.
With you. Listen, as somebody who's been watching the Warriors all that time, I cannot tell you how many times I have screamed at the TV and gotten all caps texts from my brother that are this. Stop shooting threes! Because at a really important moment, you always miss. Just take a two.
Yeah, yeah.
But evidently, we're wrong.
But it pays off.
It pays off.
Analytics don't lie. All right, we're done. On that, we will fade slowly into the distance. That's it for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. Back tomorrow for Thursday. Hollowed out shell, maybe, who knows. In the meanwhile, keep sending us your questions, your comments, your thoughts, your random musings. Take your pick. Emails and voice memos, we'll take them both. Make me smart at marketplace.org.
Send us thoughts, too, if you have an idea for a Monday theme. Every other day has a theme. Monday needs a thing. Send us your ideas. Make Me Smart is produced and directed, I don't know if you heard, by Marissa Cabrera. We talk about her a lot on Wednesdays. Grace Rubin is our intern, who's awesome and probably also helped out a fair bit with this. Marissa reports that she's a Lakers fan. I'm going to choose to like her anyway.
Oh, wow.
Today's program was engineered by Charlton Thorpe.
Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez did our theme music. Ben Tolliday, by the way, is not in Australia anymore. He's back home, so he got out of that quarantine situation about 10 days ago before it actually happened. Bridget Bonner, senior producer, even though my personal rule is no more credits after the music stops. But I guess I did that yesterday, too.